Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013, part of the Strange Society Network. Follow at StrangePodNet on Twitter for all your macabre podcasting needs. My name is Johnny Numb, and tonight on a solo episode of The Last Knock, I'm going to be talking about a trio of films that center on notions of the cult, C-U-L-T, and I found myself sort of falling down an accidental rabbit hole recently where I found myself watching three films that centered around cults as sort of the framework of their plots. And I was like, okay. And it got me thinking about the idea of, well, there are a lot of cliches that accompany notions of cults, whether they're in the real world or in fictionalized in film or other media. And I know there's a lot of dismissal of this subgenre, largely because you get the stereotypical sort of wide-eyed true believers sort of spouting whatever the leader of the cult sees fit. You know the Manson family was a huge example of a cult that really burned itself into history and also into popular culture. You know, there's still adaptations of, you know, Manson's crimes from various perspectives. I mean, for as much as I didn't like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, at least it brought a different outsider perspective to the crimes of the Manson family and what they were doing out in Spahn Ranch back in the late 60s. But in any case, watching the three movies I'm going to discuss tonight, I was sort of struck by how there's a lot of different ways to approach the theme of the cult in cinema. It's not always the same tired thing, per se. And, you know, I'm as guilty as anyone else of sort of rolling my eyes when I see a movie as new movie is centering around a cult, but there are definitely ways to approach the subject matter, and two of the films I'm going to talk about actually I thought were pretty darn good in their own respects. So I figured the easiest way to go through the films is in chronological order. And the first film is 1975's The Devil's Reign, R-A-I-N, not R-E-I-G-N, though I guess, they're homonyms. Maybe there was a bit of clever double meaning going on there when the filmmakers came up with that title, but I kind of doubt it, because the rain in this film is very literal. It falls from the sky, and it causes a lot of melty stuff to happen to the satanic cult in a small town out in the desert. The film is most noteworthy for its cast. It features Ernest Borgnine as the sort of shape-shifting cult leader, and we also have William Shatner and Tom Skerritt. They play brothers. Keenan Wynn, who always seemed to be drunk in every movie I've seen him in. I'm not sure if that's his acting persona or if that's really how he was, but he always seems to have that sort of slurred speech and manner about him, but he pops up for a little bit. Ida Lupino is in the film, who had a notable career as a director. And you also get a little bit of John Travolta, though I don't think he has any real coherent dialogue in this film. But in any case, it involves sort of a generations-long grudge between Ernest Borgnine's sort of high priest of Satan and the family the family bloodline consisting of Shatner and Skerritt. And there's some good stuff in the film, and I actually started out thinking I would like it, but then it kind of quickly went downhill for me. The desert small town that features in the film is actually very creepy. The set design is very cool, including like this boarded up church in the middle of just sitting in the middle of the landscape. So there is this real sense of isolation and the unknown, I think, at least in the early going with the film. But unfortunately, the plot is just very nonsensical, and the film just kind of drags from one incident to the next. Granted, the makeup effects are good. You have kind of these Satan worshippers are noteworthy for not having any eyes, so they just have these dark holes where their eyes should be, and it is a creepy visual. Actually, you could say it's a little bit reminiscent of some of the imagery in that Twilight Zone episode, The Masks. You know, there's a little bit of that going through the visual design here. But, you know, ultimately the film is basically in service to this climax where the titular rain comes falling down and there's just a ton of goopy, melty practical effects going on. I think it goes on for probably about 5 minutes at least. And it's just the music going and just these close-ups of people melting. Spoiler alert, sorry. But, you know, it's just too little too late, and you just get the feeling that most of the budget went toward these effects. Because all things considered, probably with the exception of Ernest Borgnine and some of the other actors, maybe William Shatner, who would have been in Star Trek at that point, you know, it just doesn't seem like that seems like where the money went. So it's impressive for what it's worth, but it's also kind of repetitive, and it doesn't really justify what we saw leading up to that point. You know, like I said, the special makeup effects are good, but just the story is weak, and it's kind of it kind of backs up the cliches, I feel, of satanic cult films in a way, and just sort of the hokiness of them. So unfortunately, The Devil's Rain was kind of a miss for me, though it was directed by Robert Fuest, who is much more notable in my book for The Abominable Dr. Fibes with Vincent Price, and also this great film from 1970 called And Soon the Darkness with Pamela Franklin. That film is a fantastic, extremely suspenseful film that doesn't rely on gimmicks the way that The Devil's Rain does. It's just a really well-written, suspenseful film that takes place over the course of one fateful day. So yeah, The Devil's Rain didn't do much for me at all, and I would say it's definitely the weakest of the three films I'm going to talk about tonight. So moving on from that, the next film is Guyana. How am I saying this? Guyana or Guyana? Okay, I'll say Guyana, Cult of the Damned. This is from 1979 and directed by Rene Cardona Jr., who I'm not particularly fond of. He did this pretty repulsive film called Tintorera, which was basically a lot of actual shark snuff, sharks getting harpooned and otherwise beaten and killed in the name of entertainment to cheaply cash in on Jaws. So I'm not huge on the guy's filmmaking ethics, but interestingly enough, Guyana is a retelling, was shortly after the actual real life events of Jonestown happened, with Jim Jones and the People's Temple. This film came very quickly after that whole tragedy unfolded in the news. And this film is, it is an exploitative film in a lot of ways. There are some pretty vile scenes in it that are kind of surprising, because it looks like, I believe, Universal released this. And Siskel and Ebert even covered it on Sneak Previews, which I watched shortly before starting to record this podcast. So it definitely had its audience, and it had some sort of push behind it, and it had a semi-notable cast. Stuart Whitman is actually pretty fantastic as the Jim Jones surrogate here. The characters have different names. The character is James Johnson. But Whitman is very effective. You have Bradford Dillman, Joseph Cotten in the cast as well. And something that I think helps this film is there's a sense of urgency to it. There is a voiceover narration by ostensibly one of the survivors of the Johnstown massacre, and we hear the narration throughout the film to sort of clue us into what's going on, what's developing. We see things from the end of the political side with a congressman who's become aware of the situation, is concerned about it, and wants to see for himself what's happening. And you also see it firsthand from the perspective of the people who reside in Johnstown. The film is very has a very epic feel to it. I was really impressed with the often these exterior shots of the crowd in the cult just gathering and converging upon this meeting space where Whitman's character would sit on sort of a elevated wooden chair and sort of address his followers. So it's just a lot of extras, a lot of coordination, it seemed, to go into this film. It's very, despite, I'm guessing it was a pretty low budget, but it's very ambitious in what it sets out to do and how it accomplishes it. And like I said, the voiceover really adds to the sense of urgency and growing sense of dread that runs throughout the film. And the acting, I thought, was for the most part really good, convincing enough to sell this premise and not draw as much attention to the more exploitative elements of the film. I was sort of surprised, there's a sequence where three children are punished, and the punishments are pretty awful. I was like, I questioned if Mr. Cardona was was complicit with child labor laws or with some of the stuff he was doing. I'm like, yeah, I know this is fake, but some of it looks a bit too close to home there. But in any case, it's a 90-minute film. It really moves along quickly. I have to admit, despite the sort of elements that are questionable about it, I was pretty authentically riveted by this film. Again, I guess I can't make any allowances for my own I dare not say enjoyment, but just appreciation of what kind of was accomplished with this movie, because it's very bleak in its own way, and the scene in the airport, which is, you know, the recreation of the actual scene that happened at Jonestown, is very horrifying and suspenseful and heart and throat it does carry this kind of air of realism to it. So I think I appreciated a lot of that. And so you're getting perspective from the person who's providing voiceover who survived the massacre. You're also getting perspective from within the cult as events unfold from the perspective of Stuart Whitman's character and sort of the people surrounding him who are kind of, I don't want to say his lackeys, but they kind of are, and they're tasked with enforcing this kind of arbitrary law that's basically whatever the Johnson character deems a fitting punishment. There's a scene in the film where two people are caught having sex just outside the compound, and basically Johnson forces them to kneel nude before him, and he picks someone out of the huge crowd to basically have sex with, I believe, the woman. So it's just a very uncomfortable stuff, and I it reminds, it's just interesting that Universal got behind this and snapped it up and put it out in theaters. And I mean, I guess it was a different time as well. This was still within the grindhouse era where people would have been clamoring to see something like this. It's definitely not like the theatrical release sensibility of today. I mean, it's, if you watch Ty West's The Sacrament from probably the mid to 2010s, you can just see kind of the variance in how Ty West approached The Sacrament, which is also a fictionalized retelling of the Jonestown story. But his sensibility, to me, feels less exploitative than what Cardona does here. And I mean, I think The Sacrament is a great film in its own right, but it's just kind of interesting to see the approach, the two different approaches to the subject here. Okay, so the last film I'm going to talk about, and I guess kind of in a sense this works out great because I'm saving the best for last, at least in terms of what I set out to accomplish with this show. Because something I started saying was how a story revolving around a cult can be interesting or it can be dull, depending on the approach. You can approach it from a very base perspective where it's quote unquote normal people coming in from the outside to just either wipe out or rescue or, you know, bring reason to someone or a group of people who have fallen under the spell of a charismatic leader. I would say Red State is an example of that, Kevin Smith's film, but it's a good, but that film is really well done, and you understand the philosophy that's driving the inner workings of the cult in that case, as much as you understand the conflicts of the people on the outside who are trying to contain the situation with as little human casualty as possible. But in any case, I digress. The last film I'm going to talk about is from 2019, and it's called Welcome to the Circle. And this is a film I just picked up on a whim during the last Kino Lorber sale because it's an artsploitation films release, and I think they put out some interesting stuff. So I was like, what the heck? For a few bucks, I'll give it a spin and see how I like it. And it's an interesting movie in that it starts one way and then shifts to something else, and then shifts yet again to something else. It's very interesting. There are really very few films that can handle kind of the shifting of tone, the shifting of the narrative from one set of characters to another as they kind of take over the plot. You know, it's usually not so easily done. It's most movies you introduce your main characters within, what, the first 10 or 15 minutes, and those are the characters you stick with throughout the rest of the film. And in any case, the film starts off very simply with a father and daughter who are out camping in the woods. They turn off the lights, go to sleep, but they're attacked, and the screen goes to black, and next thing they know, they're in this brightly lit commune with people dressed in white, and there's at least three women, and they're very friendly, very accommodating, always big smiles, you know, positive sentiments, and there's also a man who is ostensibly the leader of the group, played by Michael Rogers from Beyond the Black Rainbow. And, of course, the father feels that something strange is going on. The daughter seems very taken with this place, and it's how it's all bright, and everybody's so friendly. She has this mask she wears. It's kind of a very creepy-looking mask. So something's obviously going on in this place. And it feels like at this juncture, writer-director Michael Fowler is kind of setting us up for the typical cult experience, if you will. Okay, so we got the wide-eyed, smiling ladies with sort of the weird, spouting the weird philosophies. You know, you got the sort of subdued male who's ostensibly in some power position over these women and this commune. You even have some children thrown into the mix as well, who also like wearing masks. So it's quite, it feels like a very obvious setup. And for a bit, it feels like, okay, this film is going to be about the father trying to get the daughter out of this cult. It's going to center around their escape and how their plans are foiled until, you know, they're either forcibly adapted to the cult or they die trying to get out. That's usually how it goes in the more generic offerings of this subgenre. So what's interesting about Welcome to the Circle is that, okay, we're introduced to the father and the daughter, and then we shift to some other characters, and there's something else going on with these characters, and they have a different modus operandi. They're trying to infiltrate the cult for a different reason, and intentionally infiltrate the cult. And from there, it gets very interesting, let's just say. I think from a philosophical standpoint, Welcome to the Circle kind of epitomizes what I like about a cult film, because it really sort of settles into the mentality of people who follow cult leaders and why they follow them. It gets into some metaphysical territory that I think is really well conveyed, often through pretty simple means. The film doesn't have a lot of flash and spectacle in terms of like visual effects. It's often just really simple little tricks that are employed to kind of convey that we're stepping outside of a conventional reality and into something a bit headier. And that's something I like. It really kept me in the film. And in a sense, while I won't say I started to believe the philosophies of the circle, I found them interesting from a metaphysical slash existential perspective. Because what often leads people to fall in with a cult is kind of the promise of something that's kind of beyond the human plane, experience or sensation, some sort of feeling that you can't get from, you know, sex or drugs or, you know, stuff people use as a form of escape, searching for that sort of ultimate spiritual fulfillment. And that's something I really liked about Welcome to the Circle. You really feel like it's sort of sticking the landing in taking you to another place, but you're also still left in this position where you're also questioning what's happening and the validity and the quote-unquote reality of it. The performances are really good in this film. There are some scenes where it's just like two characters in a room and one character is doing a lot of talking, explaining but not explaining things. There's a lot of paradox at work in this movie, and that is likely to frustrate a lot of people who are looking for something more clean cut. But anybody who knows me knows that I really enjoy films that don't, that give us philosophy, but don't, you know, give away everything. Perhaps there's a bit to be, you can sit and think about, afterwards. And something I like about Welcome to the Circle is that the ultimate, the originator of this cult, sort of not unlike James Johnson in Guyana, Cult of the Damned, is that there's this sense of arbitrariness to the philosophies that he extols. So it's an interesting little failsafe for Fowler and the rest of the filmmaking crew, in that every time the film starts to not make a, it starts to go up its own ass in terms of its philosophy. I sat back and I thought, that's clever though, because they integrated that notion of the originator of this was just making stuff up as he went along. And that just worked so well, I thought. I was like sort of waving my finger at the screen and thinking, yeah, well done, well done. And I think in a sense that does capture some of the cult mentality there. And so I really liked Welcome to the Circle. I don't want to give too much away about it because I feel like it is a bit of an underseen film. I forget how I first heard about it, in all honesty. I might have seen someone's review of it on Letterboxd, but I don't think I would have found it on my own. So it's definitely a film worth checking out if you like cult films that sort of work through their philosophy, and sort of an economical sense to sensibility towards committing it to film. In a lot of ways, this felt like the film I wanted The Endless to be, the Benson and Moorhead film from a couple years back, that left me very cold and disappointed. It felt like a lot of high concept, heady stuff, but it really didn't delve into the philosophy in a way that satisfied me. It felt a little bit like Shane Carruth, who did Primer, had kind of hijacked the film and made it into this kind of anti-entertainment, which I just... The Endless was just a film I wanted to end because it did so little for me. And I know I'm in the minority with that opinion. A lot of people love that movie. But when I watched Welcome to the Circle, it was like, oh my God, this is kind of what I wanted The Endless to be. So I was extremely satisfied with the experience of watching that. And I'll definitely be checking it out. It's definitely a film I can see myself revisiting in the future and sort of deciphering more of it with each viewing, or at the very least sort of getting sucked into the experience all over again, which I think is what a film that centers around a cult should do. Is it should sort of, it should either make you a believer in a sense, or it should put you on the side of the people who are trying to reason with, or it's basically, I feel like films that center around cults need to place you in the shoes of the cultists or the people on the outside of the cult trying to infiltrate their way in. In the case of Welcome to the Circle, it puts us in the shoes of both, which is another impressive feat, no pun intended. So, in any case, I know Thanksgiving is coming up. I unfortunately couldn't think of a Thanksgiving theme. There's a possibility that you may be sharing turkey with some people who subscribe to some out there political philosophies who may seem brainwashed or in a cult themselves. So maybe that's the tie-in to the holiday with tonight's episode. Who knows? But in any case, that brings us to the end of the show. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. Of course, you can find my movie reviews at CrashPalaceProductions.com because Billy is a nice guy. And you can also find my writing over at The Screening Space, run by the wonderful Susan Layton at Suze Layton on Twitter. And that's it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Enjoy your holiday, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.